Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
It's one of our top news stories this week. Over 80 animals were rescued from a home in Fairfield after crews responded to a medical call reporting a possible animal cruelty case. Animal control ended up taking out of that home cats, geese, turkeys, and ducks, and all of them are being evaluated at local shelters this morning. Now, this comes the same month that there was an issue on Sherwood Farm Road as well. And there were actually protesters talking about the home of Bailey the dog. And unfortunately, Fairfield, like many other towns and cities, has had animal cruelty cases in the past. So joining me this morning, great timing for this, is First Select Woman Brenda Kupchick. And good morning, Brenda. What are sort of your initial thoughts on these animal cruelty charges and having better protections in place in Fairfield?
Well, first, good morning, Melissa. It's nice to talk to you. And be back on. Yes, we have had some very serious animal cruelty cases. If you remember the Fairfield Five, the dogs that were left basically to starve in their crates, which that case is actually still in the court system, and it was horrific. But these two cases, so the one that happened just this Saturday was a complaint. A neighbor, I guess, alerted police about the situation, and they went there 8:30 in the morning on Saturday and found the 80 animals, chickens, ducks, in sort of a situation of a squalor or potential animal hoarding situation. And they took the resident to the hospital for evaluation. I think there may have been some mental health or could potentially be some mental health issues. But luckily, according to my chief, who called me that morning to let me know what was going on, the animals seemed to be fine, in good health. And I do want to thank the other local ACOs from Trumbull, Bridgeport, and Stratford that assisted our ACO and our law enforcement to remove the animals safely. And they're all helping us shelter them because there was a lot of them. So gratefully, they're fine. The other case is a little bit more complicated. When I was in the legislature, I served as the co-chair of the Animal Welfare Caucus, and we worked on a lot of animal welfare legislation while I was there. One of the bills that we couldn't get as tight as we wanted to was a proper shelter bill, and there was a lot of pushback from various organizations on exact language on proper shelter. So this dog, Bailey, was brought to my attention by a neighbor, and it sort of took up some speed on social media regarding a family who was basically having, you know, leaving the dog out most of the time.
You're saying just left out outside?
Outside. Now, our law enforcement went and looked at the dog. The dog was in good health, all up to date on its vaccinations, and properly fed, all of those things, and healthy. But people were very upset about this situation where the dog wasn't allowed in the house full time. So it had access to a garage, access to a pool house, and tethering, some parts of the day. So the laws on tethering are very particular. You can't tether a dog for more than 15 minutes in very extreme weather, according to state law. And the sheltering bill that we worked on, and you would think this would be an easy thing. Like, everybody would agree that, you know, proper shelter is a basic right of a domestic animal.
Totally. It's a necessity.
But, you know, exactly. But then you have up in the northeast corner, the more rural areas of our state, where people have hunting dogs who leave them in barns, or, you know, they have different criteria or standards. And, you know, we just couldn't get that bill as tight as we wanted to. Now, average everyday citizens like yourself and mine, and by the way, I heard you a couple weeks ago mention you have a beagle.
Yes, we had a beagle for a long time. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm a beagle. I'm a beagle mother, and I've had a rescue.
They're the best.
I've had rescue beagles for a very long time. we typically don't, the average everyday citizen doesn't view their domestic animal as just a dog, right?
Right. They're not working
family.
Dogs. Right. They're
yeah,
there
they
for enjoyment.
They live in your house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're part of your family. Many times they sleep right in your bed with you.
Yes. Absolutely.
But some people don't view it that way. So I just want to be clear because this, I got a tremendous amount of calls and emails to my office about this. And I responded to everyone as the best I could. We checked with the laws. Our police don't make laws. They enforce laws. And they went out repeatedly to this house to visit the dog, to talk to the family. And the family was very cooperative. They just have a different viewpoint. So at the end of the day, they did say they would bring the animal in the house at night, bring the dog in at night, and also during inclement weather, and get it a better doghouse when it is outside. But people still, are very upset about this. And,
sure.
Thought that I would have the right or have the authority to just take that dog. And so I've had to explain numerous times that I don't have that authority mm-hmm. under the law mm-hmm. To take someone's animal if they're not breaking any laws. So we're working on a local ordinance. I reached out to my the head of the Connecticut Humane Society, who I worked on animal legislation for years with, and she gave me some good language to try to work with the town attorney to give to our local RTM to see if they could work on a local ordinance. Because I don't know if you're aware, but Stamford just recently passed a tethering law for
yes.
their town, which is stricter. Yeah. It's stricter than the state law. But believe it or not, the AKC fights against a lot of these laws, the American Kennel Club. So it's always more complicated than it appears.
Interesting.
But I think we're on the right track trying to get something done in Fairfield so that if something like this comes up again in the future, we'll have something in place to be able to act on.
We're talking to First Electwoman Brenda Kupchick of Fairfield, and we're discussing animal cruelty and how to better keep on track of it, basically, and how to try to eliminate some of these cases that we're seeing, specifically in Fairfield. Not to say, I want to make that very clear, it's not like this only happens in Fairfield, so just want to make that super clear. Here's my question, Brenda. So I understand, the tethering, that's one thing, and certainly that's still being discussed. In this specific case that happened over the weekend, I'm curious, are there laws on the book right now? There has to be laws on the book, like how many animals you're allowed to actually have in your home, depending on how big your home is, or zoning or things like that. Like, I'm surprised with this property when I look it up, to even allow geese or ducks or chickens on the property. Like, I'm just curious, are there laws right now that say, hey, you can only have, a dog, a cat, a ferret, whatever, versus poultry on property, or you need to have these zoning rights, or I've got to imagine there are things like that already on the books, right?
Yes, there are.
Okay.
And so each town has different zoning laws, as do we. And I don't have the specifics, but I'm pretty sure, in Fairfield, there are specific zoning laws regarding having poultry, like chickens, on your property.
Mm-hmm.
How many, how they're allowed to be there. Because we do have residents who do have chickens. As a matter of fact, my neighbor across the street has some chickens, not a lot, but they use them for fresh eggs and
sure,
and a lot of people do. So, but there are zoning laws, and there will be residents who will call and say, somebody has too many chickens or whatever it is, and our zoning people will go out and check and make sure they're in compliance. Yes, there are laws about how many dogs you can have in a house. Each town has a different criteria, but obviously 80 animals on one property is not in line with any current laws. And listen, I get it. This happens. I saw it as a legislator who was, very involved with animal welfare issues. This happens throughout the state where people, are very sympathetic to animals, and they think they're doing something good, and they're taking them in and they're rescuing them, and they get occasionally in over their head.
Mm-hmm.
And they have way too many, and they can't care for them, or they're obviously putting these animals at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens. Many times they have good intentions starting out, and it happens. They get into an animal hoarding situation, which I'm sure you've read about.
Right.
And that's what happens. But they're safely out, so that's a good thing. And it's not a situation that happened like years ago where those five dogs were found.
Right.
You know, so there was intervention. And, you know, it would have been helpful if there was intervention for those animals prior to that situation.
Absolutely.
Know,
yeah, I would say that's one of the positives in this is that was my understanding from the reports is that at least all these animals are alive and they seem like they were in okay to good health, which is good. This sounded like a hoarding situation.
Right.
Yeah, I it's unfortunate, Brenda, that there can't be like a database where, you know, humane societies or rescues, but there's just so many. I mean, you could have people going to get ducks in Arkansas for all we know. You know, like there's no way to track like, hey, no, it shows that you've adopted, you know, you have a max of like, five animals, let's just say, for your property. And it already shows that you have three of them. But it's literally impossible to do that. It's just impossible. There's
well,
no
there are state laws on the books about bringing animals into the state. You know, you're supposed to go through the Department of Agriculture and you're supposed to register. You're supposed to show proof of vaccination, even rescue. All the rescues are supposed to do that.
I wonder if people actually do, though. I wonder if they do.
The good ones do.
Yeah.
The good ones do.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyone can drive down to Arkansas or anywhere else and load up their minivan or their truck or whatever with dogs, cats, or whatever animals they want and they can come into the state and no one would know it.
Mm.
So, you know, these things happen. And I don't know where this person got the chickens and, you know, maybe he was hatching the chickens. Maybe he just, I don't know, found the chickens. But,
right.
He brought them to his house probably with a good intention of caring for animals they thought were in distress or needed rescue and then got in over his head.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to First Elect Woman Brenda Kupchick. Brenda, I know we're running out of time here, but I did want to get an update from you. It sounds like you presented before the Charter Revision Commission last week with the two other selectmen about ideas for charter revision. What were some of the things that you talked about?
So it was interesting. We were asked because there was a night for an elected officials night and there wasn't enough time for us. So we came on this week and it was good. I thought it was really productive. Both select people shared their opinions as members of the Board of Selectmen for the last 2 years and what they saw and sort of their input about how, some of the challenges with our form of government, how it's kind of clunky. And actually both selectmen made comments to that effect about it's clunky and it's slow. And because we have such a big town, and that was what I was saying as well, you know, we have a big town. And I think a lot of people were fearful and have been talking a lot about, oh, Fairfield's going to turn into a city. They're going to change it. And I had, you know, very clearly stated during my comments to the commission that I don't want them to change our town into a city, even though we're big enough to be a city. We're the 11th largest municipality in the state. But I think we should maintain our town, distinction, and we should be maintaining being a town. I just think that we could tighten it up. And I just shared my sort of experiences leading a town of this size with the multiple layers of different boards you have to go through to get things done. And it does slow the process down. It's very repetitive in many cases. And so each of us shared similar things of that nature of how we can streamline our budget process a little bit so that it is more streamlined, but it's also still provides checks and balances. And the public can actually follow along because right now you're looking at like over 70 hours of meetings on the budget alone
mm-hmm.
that lasts for months and months and months and months. And, you know, the average everyday citizen, if you wanted to follow a little along, I mean, you'd have to be pretty dedicated to listen to every single one of these meetings that go on for hours on end. So I think that we gave some good input and I'm really excited to see how they look at everything they've been getting because people have been emailing and calling and tuning in and providing input. So I think it's going to be an interesting process. So I look forward to keeping you updated on it because it's exciting. It's exciting stuff mm-hmm. for us sort of government sort of wonky people who enjoy this sort of thing.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Brenda, not to put you on the spot at all, because I do know we've run out of time, but it looks like we have a call from one of our listeners who I know is from Fairfield. Would you like to take that call? Or I know we've run out of time and
sure.
I've kept you long.
No,
yes. Okay.
If it's okay for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Fine, yeah. Bill, you're on right now. A quick question if you have for Brenda before we have to go to traffic and weather.
I know how. Hi, Brenda. Good morning.
Good morning.
I was the Fairfield dog warden in the late 70s. And I know for that everybody has got the animal's welfare in mind. And if Paul and the police department have investigated, then I think, you know, that's been satisfied. If it wasn't an animal, excuse me, if it wasn't an animal, I think that, you know, that would be the end of it. A lot of times these neighbors don't get along, and they base it more on the relationship of the person instead of the animal.
Bill, are you referring to, like, the Bailey story? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So, yeah, Brenda, I think...
I agree, Bill. Listen, Paul's been around a long time, and, you know, I have a lot of faith in our law enforcement, and they checked every box. They went multiple times to that house, mm-hmm. Many times. And the dog was in good care and fully vaccinated and healthy, and it's just, you're right, there is a difference of opinion about how we should treat our domestic animals. I don't think this dog is being abused. I think that that it should be in the house. And the family, again, the family agreed to bring the animal in the house at night and in inclement weather. So that, to me, was a win. But, yes, can we strengthen our laws so our law enforcement and ACOs have actual language where they could go in and say, okay, you're not complying with this specific thing that we now have on the books in our town? That makes their job easier as well.
Bill, we thank you so much for the call. We have run out of time. Brenda, thank you so much for always giving us so much time on the show. We appreciate it.
No, I enjoy it, Ms. Melissa. Have a good week.
Well, thank you. You too. Enjoy your Thanksgiving with your family.
Fighting against injustice across Connecticut, Melissa in the Morning checks in with the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities on WICC 600.
And good morning. This morning we are checking in with Michelle Dumas-Cooler. And my understanding, Michelle, is there is a bill coming out about the right to counsel. What is this bill all about?
Good morning, Melissa. So this bill is pretty it's pretty revolutionary for the revolutionary state. The Connecticut Right to Counsel bill was passed in June. And what it will do is it will provide legal services to tenants who are 80% or below median income in their eviction proceedings. And so we are the third state in the United States to provide this type of service. Maryland and Washington State also provide this. Basically, what happens during an eviction is that the bulk of landlords, so about 80% of landlords, have some counsel. They have an attorney representing them when they are evicting their tenants. But only 7% of tenants have an attorney representing them when they're in court. So there's a huge disparity in terms of the representation when someone's about to lose their housing. And so it causes a lot of problems.
I was going to say really quick, Michelle, not to cut you off, but is the reason that there's such that's a drastic difference in percentages. Is the reason because people just can't afford an attorney? Is it as simple as that?
It's as simple as that. Yep, exactly. It's it's expensive to have counsel. And a lot of the times, just proportionately, people who are renting may not have the funds to afford counsel because they are, that all the money that they make really goes towards that rent and clothing and food. And so that's why it's at a certain level of income, too. So the way the law is written is that, like I said, it's going to be a certain group of people who otherwise really would not be able to afford to have an attorney represent them.
That's so interesting, Michelle, because when you watch all these legal shows, or even if you've sat in a courtroom yourself in my situation, I've sat in a courtroom so many times for reporting purposes. But, you know, they always say, like, if you don't have the money for an attorney, you'll have one assigned for you. I just think it's interesting that doesn't carry over for these kinds of situations.
Exactly. That's only for criminal cases. And so if you're going to face a certain type of criminal charge, then you do get counsel. But these evictions are civil matters, but they're incredibly disruptive. You are losing your home. You are having to pick up all of your belongings, and you don't know where you're going. And especially in this housing market, because of the pandemic, there really is not a lot of place to go. And so it's incredibly disruptive. How are you going to work, go to school, have your kids go to school when you didn't even have the possibility of kind of that equal? We always think about things being equal. This is really unequal in every way possible. And so so this bill really is an effort to help tenants kind of, you know, the proverbial level, the playing field in terms of having counsel in order to, you know, negotiate the best circumstance for both the landlord and the tenant. I mean, there are certainly circumstances where for one reason or another, a tenant maybe did fall behind. And so but there's usually reasons why. And so this will help in those circumstances.
Sure. And this is not to sound like landlords are doing anything wrong in most cases. I just want to make sure that's very clear. But, you know, when you don't have equal representation, I mean, I just feel like that's game over for a tenant. I think that's game. I mean, what's the point? I mean, essentially, you're telling the landlord like there's not, you know, you have no ground to stand on when you don't have legal representation.
Correct.
Yeah, I think that's...
And the housing courts are really great. You know, they have a mediation program and all the cases have to go through them. But that mediator is a neutral. They're there to help both of the parties equally. They are not taking a side. And so when you have your own counsel, that person is there to advocate for you and for you only. And so that's why it's important. While the housing, the court services are really helpful and they're really, you know, there to really help with the parties, they're neutral. And so having your own counsel who's there to advocate for you is really important. And the money is coming from the federal government. It's part of the pandemic relief that is coming to the state. And so it'll be funded for the next 2 years by federal money. That's going to be administered by the Connecticut Bar Foundation. So it's kind of all encapsulated into this program so that it really will provide these incredible direct services to people pretty quickly. The program itself has already started in that notice has gone out October 1. Landlords are required to give notice to their tenants if they're evicting them with their notice to quit or their summons if they're actually at that phase. And then as of January 1, the program itself is going to slowly be phased in through the courts. In Connecticut, depending on the formula.
So Michelle Dumas Cooler is here this morning with the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities. You kind of teed me up perfectly there because my next question was going to be who fits the bill. So it sounds like the federal government does. But here's my question, because I always get nervous about this with federal relief funds. You know, as you mentioned, this is going to be able to fund this for the next 2 years. Great. What's the plan after that? Because it's not like this will go away. This is always going to be a problem.
That's a really good point. So there is a committee that is going that was put in place with the bill itself that's going to be studying the program as it moves along. And so I'm assuming that as the program moves along, it'll be something that the committee will study its effectiveness and where the money can come from or whether it can be sustaining in some way beyond the 2 years and whether the government would be able to continue to fund it. It'll be interesting with all of the programs. We have another program that we talked about, Unite CT, which is a subsidy program, how long they will continue after they're supposed to expire. They may still be necessary. So I think that hopefully when the time comes, when the funding may come to an end, hopefully it will be refunded. But there is a committee that was formed along with it as the passage with the bill occurred that we'll be studying that. So so hopefully that will continue after that.
Interesting. So this is a bill right now that's being debated. And if it does get passed, it would start October 1st of next year?
No, it's already passed. So it passed in June.
Oh, okay.
And so as of October 1 of this year, the notices had to go out to all the tenants if landlords were beginning the eviction process. And also the court needs to send notice to any tenants they see as pro se, meaning unrepresented.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going through mediation or have any hearings coming up, the court needs to notify them also of this right to counsel.
Gotcha.
Bill. And as of January 1 of 2022, that is when the actual counsel services will begin. But
that's
it will be
okay.
phased
okay.
because, you know, there's housing courts all over the state, and the phase will depend on geography, zip code, where it's most needed first, mm-hmm. and then it will kind of trickle down from there to different parts of the state. So my guess is that the bigger courthouses with the larger dockets of evictions will be the first ones that will have the program instituted there.
Okay. So Bridgeport might land on that list.
I would say so. Yeah, it would be pretty. Yeah, I would say so. Bridgeport,
okay.
New Haven, Hartford. Waterbury.
Right. Well, Michelle, we always appreciate getting the inside scoop and hearing from the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities. Thank you so much for all of this, and we'll talk to you really soon.
Great. Thanks, Melissa. Take care.
Good morning. We're getting excited for the holidays, and one of my dear friends, Brian Smith, is back. You know him from Legends of WICC when we did that for months during the pandemic. Brian, of course, is a very well-known voice to our radio airwaves, and he is here this morning to preview these two very big events. Good morning, Brian. Thanks for being back on the show.
Thanks. Well, thanks for having me, Melissa. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course.
It always takes the tree lighting as you get the holiday season kind of kicked off.
Oh, my gosh, it's so true. It's very exciting.
The other thing, talking about Christmas trees, is that you've got these places around different towns and cities around, the world, but especially Connecticut, most of Connecticut, where people sell the trees, whether it's schools or parking lots.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other big thing, too. When you see those trees finally come in and get set up in the parking lots, then you know it's Christmas time.
Yes, it's so true. Oh, and it gets so exciting. It is really exciting.
Yeah. So there's a couple of places now that have empty frames waiting for those Christmas trees to get loaded in, and then it's like a ribbon cutting for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Then here comes the holidays.
Yeah, it's so true. Well, we know in Milford, we know the holidays are coming when they've got their annual tree lighting, and they don't have one but two this year, Brian.
No, there's two. I mean, I guess people like these things so much, why not do more than one?
I mean, I'm not against it. I love it. I think it's a great idea. So the first one's this Friday, correct?
The first one is this Friday, as usual. It's always been like that, I guess, with most places, the day after Thanksgiving. And this year, the city of Milford has its annual tree lighting ceremony. Now, last year in most places, as in Milford, it was done because of COVID restrictions. It wasn't done with a big hoopla. They were just turned on. But this year, everything's back. So 5:30 on the Milford Green this coming Friday night, we start things with the Milford Concert Band, and they'll be playing Christmas music. Of course, people start to gather, and there's hot chocolate, and there's, people dressed up, and there's jingle bells, and DJ Sheila will be playing as well. Then, I don't know how they do it in other places, but we got Santa Claus to ride a fire truck.
Well, there you go. See,
you go.
He doesn't mess around in Milford.
Yep, and according to the schedule, around 6:15, here comes a fire truck, here comes Santa Claus. I think it would be cool if Santa Claus drove the fire truck, but I don't think they can let him do that or not.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he's got a lot on his plate with the waving and making
true.
Sure, so I think they try to, take as much. I mean, and he's coming all the way down from the North Pole. So, they probably want to take as much pressure off of him, and we totally appreciate
that. True. Santa, stop the waving. Put your hands on the wheel.
And Exactly. He's got a lot to do, so it's all good. It's all good.
He comes over to the gazebo. Then Mayor Blake will give his Christmas and holiday address to the crowd. And they light it up at 6:30.
And this is the massive tree that's literally right in the center of the green, correct?
Right, right behind the, it's the tree right behind the green, right behind the gazebo on the green. But in Milford, the entire green is lit up.
Lit up, yeah. I was going to say, you've got probably three or four of those massive trees, but the biggest one behind the gazebo, that's the big shebang, if you will.
True, and I was watching the city guys were putting the lights up. This week, and there's icicle lights this year.
I'm excited for that.
And I think I don't know if everybody feels this way, but I'm waiting for some time. There's so many lights. I'm waiting for them to flip that switch and all the lights in the town go out.
So it's funny you say that, Brian. I will only say it because somehow, some way, we were able to get the lights back on. Last year, we went to check out the lights in at the green because, it was just fun. It's great. And Chase unplugged it.
So Chase actually unplugged the lights of the massive tree, and I don't know how that was connected to other trees, but there was an outage at one point. And thank God my husband somehow was able to find the plug and plugged it back in about 3 seconds later. But for a second there, I'm like, did you really just destroy downtown Christmas? Did my kid just do that?
Yeah. I think he could get a scholarship to MIT with that. Electrical engineer.
Oh, good Lord. Good Lord. So we've got that tree. And then what I think is cool, Brian, is you and I a couple weeks ago were talking about the other tree, which is really different and very fascinating. Tell us about the lobster trap tree.
Well, one of our ambassadors of Milford, Michaela, she had been to, I think, Block Island, and mm-hmm. I think there's another place in Rhode Island. It has a lobster trap Christmas tree. And what this is, if you've ever seen lobster traps, they look like cages.
Right.
That they used to catch lobsters with. Not a lot of lobsters left in Long Island Sound. So thanks to our friends at Briar Patch Enterprises in Milford, who they supply oysters all over the East Coast to restaurants in New York, the Oyster Festival, they had some lobster traps, so they're letting Milford borrow those. And they're going to build, and if you go online to and just Google lobster trap Christmas tree, you'll see pictures of trees like this around the Northeast, but nothing in Connecticut. And this will be building, it's kind of like building the pyramids, building circles and circles and circles of lobster traps. And this thing could be about 25 feet high, 30 feet high at least.
Wow.
And it looks great. I've seen the pictures online. I'm sure Milford's will look just as well, if not better. And I heard you talk about the decorations. What is going on is that the Milford Arts Council has sold buoys, white buoys that you would use for a boat,
right.
Smaller ones that are about maybe 2 feet high, to families and artists around town. And it's a fundraiser for the Milford Arts Council, but they sold out. And the different families and artists will paint these in their own way.
Oh, my gosh. This
some
is
are gonna
so
paint
cool.
Them. Some are going to put, I heard somebody's going to put, glass mosaic all over and
wow.
Hang them all over the tree. So they're going to build that down at the fishing pier, kind of near Scooby-Doo's, on Saturday. That's Saturday, December 11th, starting at noon. Then they'll light that tree up the next day, Sunday, the 12th of December. They're going to light it up starting at 4.
Wow. That sounds so beautiful. So where is that tree located?
That is, if you know High Street, and
yes.
In Milford, they've got the Historical Society. If you go all the way down to the end, there's a fishing pier with a small gazebo.
Yeah. Yes,
of right
course.
In that area. Yep.
Okay, so if for anyone who doesn't know, if you're familiar with, I guess if you want to go with Scooby-Doo's, everybody knows Scooby-Doo's, or even where like the bridge is, the walking bridge that goes over where you can go over to like where the public library is. At the very end of the street, if you were to go away from Scooby-Doo's, away from the burger joint there, away from the bridge, the opposite direction, not towards the green, at the very end, yes, there's a gazebo down that way. That's
yeah.
A perfect spot for it. My gosh, you couldn't put it in a better spot.
And I might add, on a personal level, it's where Pirate Day happens every year in Milford.
And you love Pirate Day.
Not that I would know anything about that. Arg.
Arg. I love that. So that tree lighting, you said, is December 11th? Is that what you said?
That will be. They're going to build it on the 11th, which is a Saturday.
Okay.
And that's a lot of work. And then the lighting. If
is the
done,
next day.
I assume it's going to be done. I think they're going to be working overnight.
Wow.
The lighting will be on Sunday the 12th, starting at 4.
So cool. Well, Brian, I love that you always have the inside scoop, and I'm so excited for the tree lightings this year. I will probably see you there, correct?
Yes, I would assume so. I'll be there, seeing if I can find where to unplug the lights.
Yeah, right? If not, Chase will take care of it for you, I promise you.
I just want to mention one more thing.
Yes.
The tree lighting that's happening this Friday, the day after Thanksgiving,
mm-hmm.
I mentioned Santa Claus will be arriving thanks to our friends at the Milford Fire Department, but also Milford Bank down there is having a winter wonderland where they're going to have face painting and other entertainment and food if you show up there and want some food. So Milford Bank is right next to the green where the tree is going to be. So if you get caught short and say, oh, I'm going to feed the kids, well, just go on down there.
Just
and you're
go to the
set.
Bank. That is so nice. Well, Brian, we appreciate all the details. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful Thanksgiving with your family.
You too, Melissa. Thanks. Maybe we'll see you down there.
Thanks, friend. Oh, you'll definitely see me. I'll come find you. Thanks, Brian.